If you're fond of eating clams and oysters, you probably don't like the paralytic shellfish poisoning that's caused by red tide, a seasonal bloom of algae. Along the eastern seaboard of the U.S., the Alexandrium fundiensi algae is the culprit, and it can cost shell fishermen millions in lost revenue. But it might not for long. Scientists at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute are developing possible solutions to kill off future red tides. Living on Earth's Ashley Ahern reports.
In warm, sunny summer waters off the East Coast, life is good for the Alexandrium algae. The single-celled organisms float near the surface, photosynthesizing and multiplying like there's no tomorrow. But there's one critter that can take all the fun out of being a free-swimming Alexandrium.
I saw these little green bodies inside of the red tide-causing organism Alexandrium. And on closer inspection, it turned out to be this parasite that is found in Alexandrium.
Mario Senka was a PhD student at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute when he came across Alexandrium algae's worst nightmare, the Amebifria parasite.
Certainly when I first looked at these creatures in the microscope and saw how they emerged from the host in this almost alien-like way, I became very interested in them.
The parasites take control of a healthy Alexandrium cell and drag it down into darker waters. Then, the parasites suck nutrients from their weakened host and get ready to make their exit in search of new prey.
In one corner of the host peeps out this thing. It's this very long chain of cells that has little flagella on its side that's swimming, pushing, trying to come out of its host. And then it breaks off from its host and starts to swim away, wiggle away, and what's left is the empty husk or shell of the host.
When Mario Senka realized that he'd found a natural predator of the poisonous red tide algae, he knew there was more to be learned about this little pest.
So our first big question is, what is the role of this parasite in the population dynamics of its host, Alexandrium?
That's where Dave Koulis comes in. Koulis is a senior research assistant at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, and today he's collecting samples from three spots on Salt Pond. Salt Pond is a small tidal pond on Cape Cod that serves as a microcosm of the Alexandrium algae's life cycle in the open ocean.
We're good here. This is an integrated sample. We've got this 2-meter-long PVC pipe, and we can close it off on the top end and capture a 2-meter column of water.
Koulis sticks the long PVC straw into the water to get a general measure of the amount of Alexandrium and parasites in the pond. At our next site, the sampling gets more specific.
So what we're going to do here is we're going to pump water at discrete depths from the bottom up to the surface.
The samples tell the scientists how both healthy and parasite-infected Alexandrium cells move around. This is how they found out that the infected Alexandrium cells sink before splitting open to release their parasitic invaders. But there's a missing link in what scientists like Mario Senka know about the life cycle of the Amebifria parasite.
We don't know how the parasite survives when the host that it needs is not abundant in the water.
When the nutrients run out after the big snowmelts in the spring are flushed out to sea, Alexandrium algae cells stop dividing and instead start to form cysts, fertile little red tide time capsules that sink to the bottom and wait it out for fresh nutrients the following spring.
So we collected samples on the bottom of Salt Pond to look at the cysts being produced by the Alexandrium host and try to see if we can find parasites within them.
When parasites infect Alexandrium in the pre-cyst phase, they stop the algae cells from dividing. So Senka has a hunch that if the parasites get into the Alexandrium cysts, they'll make them infertile as well, preventing further red tide blooms. Even though Senka may have discovered a natural birth control for red tide, he's not advising dumping extra parasites into the ocean anytime soon. But he says that in learning more about red tide's killer, we can learn more about red tide itself.
We focus a lot on how blooms begin. But there are not many studies that focus on how blooms end. We have to understand how these parasites can contribute to the decline of blooms or how long a bloom persists in nature from a biological perspective.
For Living on Earth, I'm Ashley Ahern in Eastham, Massachusetts.